His knees buckled and he swayed. He came back upright and brought the Steyr back to the only thin sliver of Alan's head he could make out. The muzzle wavered through a circle, a small circle at first, then a larger one as the weight of the gun overwhelmed the control in his shoulder. He coughed and pushed blood out of his mouth with his tongue. The Steyr was coming down. He watched the front sight dropping like a strong man was pulling on it. He tried to bring it up, but it wouldn't come. He forced his hand upward, but it just moved sideways, like an invisible force was deflecting it. His knees went again, and he jerked back upright like a spasm. The Steyr was miles away. It was hanging down to the right. It was pointing at the desk. His elbow was locked against its weight, and his arm was bending. Alan's hand was moving. He watched it one-eyed and wondered, is what I feel for Jody as good as being pumped up by angel dust? The barrel snagged out from a fold of cloth and came free of her jacket. Am I going to make it? His knees were going and he started shaking. Wait, just wait. Alan's wrist snapped forward. He saw it move. It was very quick. He saw the black hole in the stainless barrel. It was clear of her body. She smashed her head down and he whipped the Steyr back and got it pretty close to the target before Alan fired. It was within a couple of inches, that was all, a couple of lousy inches. Fast, he thought, but not fast enough. He saw the revolver hammer click forward, and then a flower of bright flame bloomed out from the barrel, and a freight train hit him in the chest. The roar of the shot was completely lost behind the immense physical impact of the bullet hitting him. It was a blow from a giant hammer the size of a planet. It thumped and crashed and deafened him from the inside. There was no pain. No pain at all. Just a huge, cold numbness in his chest and a silent vacuum of total calm in his mind. He fought hard for a split second and fought to stay firm on his feet, and he kept his eye wide open long enough to concentrate on the puff of soot coming from the Steyr silencer. Then he moved his eye the last little fraction and watched Alan's head burst open 12 feet away. There was an explosion of blood and bone in the air. A cloud of 3 or 4 feet wide. And it was spreading like a mist. He asked himself, is he dead now? And when he heard himself answer, surely he must be, he let himself go and rolled his eye up in his head and fell backward through perfect, still, silent blackness that continued forever and ended nowhere. He knew he was dying because faces were coming towards him, and all of them were faces he recognized. They came in a long stream, unending, ones and twos together, and there were no strangers among them. He had heard it would be like this. Your life was supposed to flash before your eyes, everybody said so, and now it was happening. So he was dying. He guessed when the faces stopped, that was it. He wondered who the last one would be. There were a number of candidates. He wondered who chose the order. Whose decision was it? He felt mildly irritated he wasn't allowed to specify. And what would happen next, when the last face had gone, what then? But something was going seriously wrong. A face loomed up who he didn't know. It was then he realized the army was in charge of the parade. It had to be. Only the army could accidentally include someone he had never seen before. A complete stranger, in the wrong place at the wrong time. He supposed it was fitting. He had lived most of his life under the control of the army. He supposed it was pretty natural they would take charge of organizing this final part. And one mistake was tolerable. Normal, even acceptable, for the army. But this guy was touching him, hitting him, hurting him. He suddenly realized the parade had finished before this guy. This guy wasn't in the parade at all. He came after it. Maybe this guy was here to finish him off. Yes, that was it. Had to be that way. This guy was here to make sure he died on schedule. The parade was over and the army couldn't let him survive it. Why should they go to all the trouble of putting it on and then have him survive it? That would be no good. No good at all. That would be a serious lapse in procedure. He tried to recall who had come before this guy, the second to last person who was really the last person. He didn't remember. He hadn't paid attention. He slipped away and died without remembering who had been the last face in his parade. He was dead, but he was still thinking. Was that okay? Was this the afterlife? That'd be a hell of a thing. He had lived nearly 39 years assuming there was no afterlife. Some people had agreed with him, others had argued with him, but he'd always been adamant about it. Now he was right there in it. Somebody was going to come sneering up to him and say, "I told you so." He would if the boot was on the other foot. He wouldn't let somebody get away with being absolutely wrong about something. Not without a little friendly ribbing, at least. He saw Jody Garber. She was going to tell him. No, that wasn't possible. She wasn't dead. Only a dead person could yell at you in the afterlife, surely. A live person couldn't do it. That was pretty obvious. A live person wasn't in the afterlife. And Jody Garber was a live person. He'd made certain of it. That had been the whole damn point. And anyway, he was pretty sure he had never discussed the afterlife with Jody Garber. Or had he? Maybe many years ago, when she was still a kid. But it was Jody Garber. And she was going to speak to him. She sat down in front of him and pushed her hair behind her ears. Long blonde hair. Small ears. "Hi, Reacher," she said. It was her voice. No doubt about it. No mistake. So maybe she was dead. Maybe it had been an automobile accident. That would be a hell of an irony. Maybe she was hit by a speeding truck on Lower Broadway on her way home from the World Trade Center. "Hey, Jody," he said. She smiled. There was communication. So she was dead. Only a dead person could hear another dead person speak, surely. But he had to know. "Where are we?" he asked. "St. Vincent's," she said. St. Peter he had heard of. He was the guy at the gates. He had seen pictures. Well, not really pictures, but cartoons at least. He was an old guy in a robe with a beard. He stood at a lectern and asked questions about why you should be let in. But he didn't remember St. Peter asking him any questions. Maybe that came later. Maybe he had to go out again and then try to get back in. But who was St. Vincent? Maybe he was the guy who ran the place you stayed while you were waiting for St. Peter's questions. Like the boot camp part. Maybe old Vincent ran the Fort Dix equivalent. Well, that would be no problem. He'd murdered boot camp. Easiest time he'd ever done. He could do it again. But he was annoyed about it. He'd finished up a major, for God's sake. He'd been a star. He had medals. Why the hell should he do boot camp all over again? And why was Jody here? She was supposed to be alive. He realized his left hand was clenching. He was intensely irritated. He'd saved her life because he loved her, so why was she dead now? What the hell was going on? He tried to struggle upright. Something was tying him down. What the hell? He was going to get some answers, or he was going to knock some heads together. "Take it easy," Jody said to him. "I want to see St. Vincent," he said, "and I want to see him right now. Tell him to get his sorry ass in this room inside 5 minutes, or I'm going to be seriously pissed off." She looked at him and nodded. "Okay," she said. Then she looked away and stood up. She disappeared from his sight and he lay back down. This wasn't any kind of a boot camp. It was too quiet. And the pillows were soft. Looking back, it should have been a shock. But it wasn't. The room just swam into focus and he saw the decor and the shiny equipment. And he thought, hospital. He changed from being dead to being alive with the same little mental shrug a busy man gives when he realizes he's wrong about what day it is. The room was bright with sun. He moved his head and saw he had a window. Jody was sitting in a chair next to it, reading. He kept his breathing low and watched her. Her hair was washed and shiny. It fell past her shoulders, and she was twirling a strand between her finger and thumb. She was wearing a yellow sleeveless dress. Her shoulders were brown with summer. He could see little knobs of bone on top. Her arms were long and lean. Her legs were crossed. She was wearing tan penny loafers that matched the dress. Her ankles glowed brown in the sun. "Hey, Jody," he said. She turned her head and looked at him, searched his face for something, and when she found it, she smiled. "Hey yourself," she said. She dropped the book and stood up, walked three paces and bent and kissed him gently on the lips. "St. Vincent's," he said. "You told me, but I was confused." She nodded. "You were full of morphine," she said. "They were pumping it in like crazy. Your bloodstream would have kept all the addicts in New York happy." He nodded, glanced at the sun in the window. It looked like afternoon. "What day is it?" "It's July. You've been out 3 weeks." "Christ, I ought to feel hungry." She moved around the foot of the bed and came up on his left, laid her hand on his forearm. It was turned palm up, and there were tubes running into the veins of his elbow.